Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Thank you for joining us on this sunny Wednesday morning, August 14th. We are getting back into the swing of things in Tucson. If you haven't noticed, a lot is happening around the U of A. They are moving houses on stilts around the area, preparing for student housing. The restaurant and bar scene is actively awaiting all of the parents to show back up into town to take their kids to Target and Sam's Club and Costco and buy them lots of things and hopefully take them out to your local restaurants. We have been waiting for this day for probably about 10 weeks since the start of our long, hot, and dry summer season here in the Old Pueblo, and it is just about over. As such, when we think about our food for thought today, we're going to talk about a few more openings coming up, as opposed to just closings. Restaurant summer news is often filled with doom and gloom, as it's our slow season, but as the entrepreneurs start to look forward to the busy season here in the desert, which tends to be really from October through about May, a lot of new concepts are going to be sprouting up. First and foremost, a big welcome opening up this week for Boscaria. You may have heard of Boscaria. They're in the location at 350 East Congress. That's right in front of the Hi-Fi, a former Fired Pie location, one of those quick serve pizza concepts that opened all across the country rapidly in 2019, 2020, and 2021, only to fold up shop a few years later. Boscaria is an interesting takeover here downtown. They're selling pinchos. It's a Spanish tapas style appetizer created from northern France and southern Spanish recipes, and they're bringing that show to downtown Tucson. That project took over 3 years to construct. Signs have been sitting up in front of Fired Pie since basically the COVID times, and I can't exactly explain how long it took for that restaurant to open and why. But the owner, Freddie Messelmari, owns Urban Pita right across the street, so located right next to Hi-Fi, a place where you might pick up a nice pita or some shawarma after an evening of adult beverages at Hi-Fi. That is a busy corner in Tucson, right? A pretty happening area there. And if you can't make it there, where are you going to make it? But there's been a host of restaurant failures on that spot up front. Years ago, if you remember, Brian Metzger opened up a taco restaurant there called Gio Taco. It's what predated the Oban concept. And I had hypothesized years ago that based on the student housing composition that we have downtown, had they just opened a Nico's Tacos or a Filiberto's and had beer or alcohol, it would probably still be there today. But student housing isn't built for a $5.50, rare protein taco. They may or may not be built for a fancy pincho. They may not be ready for that. This is sort of $5 beer and a slice of pizza sort of crowd. But yet we continue to build higher end concepts, hoping that somehow the students will support that one. And this one's going to be an interesting concept. I do wish Freddie plenty of luck out there. That's 350 East Congress, right in front of Hi-Fi. So please do go check out Boscaria. As well, opening up on Speedway in Midtown, owner Carlos Chavez and his team from Sushi Quito are opening a brand new Midtown location at 4380 East Speedway. That's essentially Speedway and Columbus. For those of you who have had the opportunity to visit Sushi Quito's first location on South 12th Avenue, it's an interesting Mexican sushi fusion concept, and they're going for number two here in Midtown on Speedway. So please do give those guys a visit as well too when they get that concept opened up. And in the news coming soon, perhaps not in the next few weeks or months, but sometime soon during season, we're going to get a new Trueland Burgers in the Crossroads Festival Shopping Center. This was the former Panera location. You may remember Trueland Burgers. The owner, Jeff and Paolo, also own Choice Greens, right? A salad concept located at River and Campbell in the shopping center, just to the northwest corner of River and Campbell. They're across the street from our restaurants here in St. Philip's Plaza. They're great restaurateurs. They've got a Trueland on Oracle Road as well, too, and they're going to open up in the Crossroads Festival. I did see on social media just yesterday another new concept popping up on Speedway, 5943 East Speedway, Paddle Alley. And there are signs and And now renderings online talking about another pickleball concept coming. A multitude of tennis and pickleball courts with a restaurant bar concept built in. Perhaps you've heard of this before. That's because it has been done in Tucson with Corbett's, you know, located, you know, just north of downtown. And we've got a second, and I hear there's even a third and a fourth pickleball concept coming into Tucson. And I'm getting a little worried that we might flood the market with pickleball. Is this going to become the new cupcake store of 2024? Like, is this a fad that's going to last not from a recreational sport, but from a restaurant and bar concept? You've got to understand that when people are playing pickleball, what they're not doing is eating or drinking. And that's kind of how we pay the bills here in the local restaurant world, is by the consumption of food and beverage. And so can they charge for the courts and find ways to monetize this in some capacity? Of course they can. Corbett's is a very well-executed local concept. I've been to a number of charity events they've done there and had some great experiences and a lot of fun there. But some of these really, really large entertainment concepts are starting to fail or to at least struggle nationwide. In the news just in the last couple of days, Callaway Golf has announced that they're looking to offload their Top Golf concept. We happen to have a Top Golf here in Southern Arizona. There are a number of them up in Phoenix. Another neat way to do entertainment. And for those of you who aren't that good at golf, it's kind of nice because when you hit from the third story, it just sort of falls off the top and dribbles forward 100 yards and makes you feel a little better than if you'd really shanked one at the driving range or at your local green. But nonetheless, they're struggling as well too. And so when multi-million dollar, you know, nationwide chains are struggling on some of these larger entertainments, I'm going to warn some of these local operators about going so deep into concepts like this. It's a lot of square footage. It's a lot of rent. You've got to heat and cool and maintain spaces like that. And it will be interesting to see if those play out in the future. And lastly, sadly, an announcer of a closure for Sand Reckoner Vineyards. They've got a tasting room at 510 North 7th Avenue, and they are closing up shop by the end of August. Wine bars are pretty, pretty tough businesses. We're going to talk about that and some other local restaurant news when we come back after the break. You are listening to Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson, 1030 AM. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. Thank you for spending part of your morning commute with us. So before the break, I was teasing at some other really big restaurant news that happened just this last Friday. If you recall, over the last couple shows on Jump in Tucson, we've been talking about tipped workers and the Tipped Worker Protection Act. I brought in some local servers to talk about how they were doing. And on Friday, the news broke that the Raise the Wage AZ ballot initiative that was attempting to raise the state of Arizona's minimum wage to $18 an hour and completely eliminate the server tip credit, which would move their wage from $11.35 up to $18 an hour. Their ballot initiative had suddenly been voluntarily pulled off. Now, this was anything but voluntarily. To put a ballot initiative on the state ballot, you need exactly 255,949 signatures, which really means you need to get well over 300,000 to meet that threshold. And they spent between $10 to $15 per signature to get this on the ballot and submitted 354,278 signatures. And we, the Arizona Restaurant Association, challenged those signatures and said, hey, before this goes to the ballot, can we have a little peek under the hood? And we did. And immediately, many of the sheets weren't filled out. There was over 28,000 blanks to begin with. And once the law firm started to look at the valid voter registration and history of those signatures, what looked like a 100,000 signature overage suddenly turned into about a 50,000 signature underage. And faced with a lawsuit that would have started yesterday on the 13th of August, One Fair Wage decided to pull themselves right off the ballot, and we are not going to be faced with this particular minimum wage increase on our ballot in November. A tremendous win for servers, bartenders, and the restaurant industry as a whole. Now, the industry's had a lot of challenges over the last few years. COVID, inflation, the economy, but one of the biggest challenges I find here locally is crime. Right, we've talked about this on the show before, the crime tax, the cost that businesses have to pay because our local governments aren't always doing their job to protect us, to follow laws that are already on the books. I've personally been robbed multiple times this year in my businesses. I keep a number of vans, company vehicles, travel trailers, and things as you could imagine as a restaurateur. I've recently had a trailer stolen in midday from the Maverick. I talked about that on the show a few months ago. And just a couple weeks ago, I moved that to a brand new storage facility located in the Alvernon and Fort Lowell area. And you can see red flag coming up here already with that statement. And within a period of just a few weeks in this brand new storage facility, it was stripped and vandalized as well of another half a dozen other vehicles there in this secure, with cameras and razor wire and lights, brand new storage facility. And I can't even begin to tell you how many times we've had chattel properties stolen from our properties. We often, sadly, don't even report those things. And so today, in studio, I've got a great friend, Brent Rustin, owner of Connect Security, a local high-tech security firm, to talk with us about these challenges and things that we could do better, both for our businesses and our homes. Good morning, Brett.
Morning. Thanks, Grant.
No, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Excited to have you in the KVI studios.
Excited to be here. Really excited to talk about it.
So break down a little bit who and what is Connect Security over here for our listeners.
Okay. Connect Security is my business partner and I, Clint Washburn, and we really started up Connect Security about 3 years ago, but it's kind of been growing since then. It goes back to 1978 with Century Security started. Born, you know, here in Tucson, grew early on in the security phase with a lot of residential, helping out with some businesses. That was acquired by Capital Connect Security, which was started in 2008 and was in about 20 states doing a lot of residential, but not a lot of here in Arizona. When they put Connect Security, Capital Connect with Century together, we started doing a lot more commercial here locally. And then in 3 years ago, when we the opportunity to present itself to bring Connect and really serve the people of Southern Arizona and the businesses and the homes here in Southern Arizona, we decided to do that. So we formed Connect Security.
Amazing. So how's business right now for you guys?
Business is, we are as busy as we can be. It's really, really good. And there's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of changes in the security space. And so we're able to bring new products and new capabilities to the people here to protect their homes, businesses, and do a lot of different things that we've done in the past.
So I've heard over this last year or two that because certain violent crime statistics are down marginally, and we're talking single-digit percentages over here of murders and things like that, that overall crime is down in Tucson. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, it's not the case. So from a national standpoint, we're well above the national. And if you go on a per capita basis, property crimes, right? Robberies, like you were just talking about, on a per capita basis per 1,000 residents, is Arizona's down in the 20.58, Tucson's in the 35.6, right? We're significantly higher for Arizona. We're significantly higher on the per capita property crimes than the national average. So Southern Arizona is really struggling with that on the property side of things.
And what do you think the causes are of that?
There's a lot. We've seen a definite increase with the vagrancy. Right. So in and around businesses, in and around our neighborhoods, along the washes, we've all seen this. There's been a significant growth in that. So we're seeing a lot more traffic in and around our buildings at night when we're not occupying them, a lot more things happening there. So there's a lot of factors, but that's a big one in there.
Yeah, I don't personally feel that Tucson is a safer or better place today than it was 5 or 10 years ago. And maybe you can say the murder rate is down 3 or 4 or 5%, but that doesn't really mean that crime is down. In fact, probably half the murders that happen in Tucson are domestic violence incidences that wouldn't have been helped by police protection in any way, either way, because they're not in someone's living room or in someone's bedroom in that particular case. But anecdotally, what I'm seeing in my business and what I'm hearing from other businesses is that property crime is not just up, but substantially up. And these are the reported numbers. And when you get into what's not being reported out there because of the feelings of despair and hopelessness that nothing is going to happen, and unfortunately some of the slower response times from TPD, and I'm not taking anything away from TPD. They're truly undermanned right now. They're bringing a proverbial knife to a gunfight. Like, what do you think it is that we can do better as a society?
No, I couldn't agree more with you. I think there's a lot of discussion around where those statistics come from and how we get them, because there's a lot of underreporting going on right now for various reasons. I think that I too appreciate the TPD and the hard work they're doing, but they are undermanned, overworked. I mean, they're in a tough situation, right? So we are trying to do everything we can in our industry to support them, right? To support homeowners and business owners and their ability to manage their security in conjunction with TPD and their ability, because there realistically are delayed response times, significantly delayed response times to break-ins and things like that. So we're trying to work with them to support that. But we've seen an uptick in property crimes and all crimes, but it's oftentimes anecdotally, like you said, because the statistics just aren't getting reported. And I think we need to just kind of on the political side is we need to, people need to be held accountable. People have to be punished or pay for their crimes. Because when we talk to the TPD, a lot of times they're frustrated because they'll take them down to the jail and the people are back out at the bus stop before they even finish their paperwork and get back out on the street. It's just this circular thing that we've got going on.
No, without a doubt. I've got a 17 and a 20-year-old daughter. And my barometer is, would it be safe for one of my daughters to walk down these streets at night? And as somebody that works and in the Midtown area, and I think of traveling down Oracle Road or traveling down First Avenue or traveling down Stone, there is a 0% chance that I would have one of my young daughters walk down those streets right now by themselves and in the dusk evening or even early morning hours, quite frankly. Like, there is not just a ton of dangerous pedestrian activity, but just open drug use like we've never seen before in the history of Southern Arizona.
Yeah. And we've got some real, real tough sectors. I mean, everyone knows if you lived in Tucson for more than 5 minutes, and I've been here my whole life, is you've got Grant and Alvernon, you've got some other areas that are really, really tough. And yeah, I agree with you 100%.
We've got areas, and again, Grant and Alvernon is probably the most famous one that we all beat on. There were t-shirts, right? The jokes that went behind it. But I think that there are areas substantially worse than that right now, Brett. I've said on the show multiple times before that First and Fort Lowell right now is pretty much the new Grant and Alvernon. If you go hang at that convenience store on the southeast corner, like, goodness gracious, is it absolutely terrifying. And I'm not for penalizing everybody for recreational drug use out there, but that doesn't mean you can do it on the street. In the same way that I'm not for people peeing or pooping, but that doesn't mean you can do it on the street, right? There's a big difference between what you can do in your home and what you can do on public land. And when you look at the bus stops and you look at these areas, it makes you wonder how businesses are getting by in those sectors. Do you have clients in those neck of the woods at all with Connect Security?
We have clients all over Tucson, and yeah, absolutely we do. Yeah, and it is tough. It is a little tough to do because you see businesses in the area that are really struggling with the issue of people coming in, leaving their businesses, leaving garbage, just being around their businesses. It affects them significantly.
And so what do you think those businesses can do? Is the answer an alarm system over here? Like, is this what it is? Is it cameras? Like, what's the fix?
Really, it's a layered approach to security, and that's how we address it, is that layered approach to security is how we go about it, and we can talk more about that.
When we come back after the break, we're going to break down with Brett, like, some things that you can do in that layered approach, both from a residential and a commercial standpoint. We're talking all things local security here on Jump In Tucson. Remember, tomorrow we've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance coming up. We've got Dr. Ed Ackerley after that on Fridays, and Ted Maxwell always bringing in the Engagement Hour on Tuesdays, 9 to 10 a.m. Don't go anymore. More security tips with Brent Rustan from Connect Security coming up after the break. You're listening to Grant Krueger on Jump In Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us for the second half of Jump in Tucson over here. We have been talking all things security in Tucson, and we've got live in studio a good friend, an entrepreneur. This is Brett Rustin, owner of Connect Security. Welcome back, Brett.
Thanks, sir.
Hey, so before the break, we were talking about tips that maybe we could share with some of our listeners. And let's break down the difference maybe between the residential and the commercial side of things and start on the residents, since most of our listeners are probably citizens and not owning businesses here in Tucson. What can you do to protect your home right now and make a difference?
Absolutely. So we mentioned earlier before the break a layered approach to security. And that's a really critical piece of this entire thing, because there's all kinds of products out there, everything from having a dog all the way to the screens and doors, you know, making sure your door locks are there, alarms, cameras. It's important that you don't just have a one-stop solution. You don't say, hey, I'm going to throw up some cameras and that's going to solve everything. It's really about layering your approach, right? So you have multiple ways to make it difficult to get into your home or your business, and also be able to document and have deterrence. So you have cameras, and the cameras, as we were talking about, are much smarter than they were in the past. There previously, the cameras were really a forensic. They tell you what happened after the fact, and you can have some video of it. But now they're getting, with analytics, modern analytics, it can tell you what's going on. It can alert you to the fact. You can have two-way communication with the person. You know, you can talk to them. It can turn on spotlights. It can do a bunch of things from the cameras that gives you an additional layer in there of deterrence and also reaction. So it's a much more proactive approach to layer it. And then access control is part of that. It's another layer to control who comes in and out of your home or your business. And even in isolated areas within your home or your business, you can have additional access control. So that layered approach is what makes it really, really proactive and helps you get what you need, which is the security.
In today's world, if you're a homeowner and you've got an alarm and it's triggered, like, where is that going? Who gets notified? And does it just make a call to TPD, which then has a 6 or 8 hour response time, or send you a form in the mail that you can answer in 4 to 6 weeks or something along these lines? Yeah. Like, who answers that? How does that work?
Yeah, great question. So it's going to go to the monitoring center, right? So who is ever monitoring your alarm, it goes to that monitoring center, and then they're going to immediately make a call to either police and notify the contact party, right? This, I just put a plug in here for the notification or the registration of your alarms. When you're in the city of Tucson, it's important that we're registering our alarms, because it's part of the way we support law enforcement. The police are really doing the best that they can, and they're really working hard. So we want to cut down on false alarms as much as possible. So you go on the website, and you can register your alarm annually, make sure you're up to date on that. And so we're trying to help out with those false alarms. But another way we can help out with the false alarms is what's called video verification now, right? So before, your old alarm system, it just tells you that someone's in the house or a glass has been broken or something like that. With cameras now, you're able to receive a text message, and in that text message, you're watching the video of what's going on in your camera, and you are able to verify what's happening, right? So you can say, oh, it's just my kid came in and forgot to disarm the alarm, so nope, it's confirm that it's not a real alarm, and you can turn it off right there with your phone. Otherwise, it can then escalate, and it can go to police, and you can see something else is going on in there. But that ability to verify what's happening is an additional layer to prevent false alarms.
Is there some connectivity that now the alarm monitoring company or even the police can view those cameras to determine the validity of that situation themselves? Or is that like an intrusion that they don't want to do in some capacity?
No, absolutely. That's an additional service that's really come online in the last couple of years, where they can video verify. You can have that service on, so someone is watching your cameras. They're not watching it all the time, and that would be very, very
right.
expensive.
The security concerns alone, you know, would scare off a lot of consumers, I think, out of that one.
But if it triggers an alarm, boom, they jump onto your cameras, they see what's going on, and they're then able to even describe to police, hey, it's two individuals, here's where they are, here's what they're doing. This it changes the game as far as the knowledge we have and we're able to provide to security and how we're police and how we're able to react to alarms. So yes. Definitely.
So let's talk about the efficacy of that video, though, because as someone that's had his car broken into, even in St. Philip's Plaza, on video, and I've been able to submit that video to the police, and they looked at it and they're like, yes, thank you. These show some humanoid creatures smashing out your window and going through your contents of your truck. And in my mind, it was going to be like CSI Pima County, and they were going to use facial recognition technology and enhance imagery and make this, you know, like some sort of, you know, run against some database. And they were like, there's not much we can do about that, but thanks for the video, thanks for playing. And we've had our pressure washer and other equipment stolen off of our back docks where we also have cameras. And I feel that when we submitted that evidence, while certainly it proved our claim that the property was stolen, it didn't really help the police in any category. Are we just recording this for the sake of recording, or is there some efficacy to video evidence?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And there's two parts to that. The first part is the reality is you could have all the evidence in the world, and unless they decide to go after the person that did this and punish them or do something like that, and we're not seeing a lot of that right now. And that's one of the frustrating parts, is that you can have pictures of who did it and how they did it and identified and everything else, but unless the law enforcement or the county attorneys are willing to go after them, that's kind of a moot point. But the other part of that is that, yeah, so now it's moved from forensics, cameras tell you what happened, to that proactive approach of you can interact, it can set off lights, it can turn on red and blue lights, it can turn a spotlight on them, you can have two-way communication with them. So it's an added level of deterrence that you're able to push him away. It's a much more proactive approach than where cameras were even a couple of years ago.
So speaking of blue lights, when I go to many local shopping centers, particularly in Midtown these days, there seems to be these giant towers, like this white tree with blue flashing lights onto it and a myriad of cameras up top, sort of like a palm tree of cameras and police lights. Like, can you give me a breakdown on these things? Like, why have these proliferated everywhere? I knew we were going to plant a million trees for our mayor, but I didn't realize that we were going to plant a million camera trees.
Yeah, and those are interesting ones, right? Because we all know that they're much more of a deterrent than they are anything, right? They're filming, yes, but also it's trying to deter people from doing anything. But the biggest thing they are, and I know this from the other side of my life on insurance and liabilities, is that's the business covering themselves, right? That's the business putting them in their parking lot in case someone is injured in their parking lot, that they can say, we took all the steps, so therefore there's limited liability for what happened in their parking lot. It's kind of a CYA thing.
But just having video of that, like, what does that do to protect the business? At the end of the day, it's just a recordation of the maladies that occurred in that particular parking lot. I don't find that when I walk into a shopping center with this giant flashing blue light tree that I actually feel any safer. I kind of feel worse, like, ooh, I have made a very tragic mistake and where I've selected to spend my money here on a retail basis, because this doesn't seem like a very safe neighborhood to me.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, we've seen the retail theft problems, right? We've seen people just walk out the store with a basket full of stuff and nothing's done, right? That's the real difficult part. So these cameras are really just acting as a deterrent or a protection for the business owners.
Any other tips for homeowners out there from the owner of Connect Security? You're listening to Brent Rustan over here, owner of Connect. Like, what else can homeowners do to keep their property safe?
Yeah. Again, going back to, I say the layered approach, but we have access control and you have the ability to enter and exit your homes with keypads so you can see who and when is entering your homes at all times. You got the cameras, which are miles beyond what we used to have with cameras. With the analytics now, it's able to tell you, is this a person in this area? Is this an animal? Is this, you know, it's able to identify a lot. And then really just kind of using that layered approach to having an alarm, to cameras, to access control, and whatever, you can tie it all together, really provides for that well-rounded protection.
No, it sounds like something that's going to unfortunately be more and more necessary for our society here in Southern Arizona moving forward. Like it or not, we've certainly got now 4 more years of the current county administration staff. There is a sheriff race still out there on November 5th. So I urge everybody that's frustrated with this to get out there and register to vote and participate in these local races over here. Everybody gets their blood boiling about who the president is going to be, or the Senate race, or the things you see on TV, whether you're a Fox News or an MSNBC person, you know, they get us all fired up. But the truth is, what's happening locally here is what's going to make the difference in all of our lives, in your home, in your business. And I think that Connect Security is going to have a pretty bright future moving forward with the way we can see the demographic shifting both in the management and government of Southern Arizona and the results that are playing out on the streets every single day.
Absolutely. It's not going anywhere and it's not going to change overnight, right? So we can hope for change, but we have to, hope's not a strategy. We have to actually be proactive in not only the voting and in the elections, but also in taking control of our own personal situations for our homes, for our businesses. We have to take a proactive approach and really adjust that. And that's what we really enjoy helping people in Connect Security, is helping people layer that approach, take a proactive approach to their security so they can really take care of what's most important to them.
We've got one more segment with Brent Reston coming up after the break. We're going to talk about some tips for businesses, for guys like me out there to learn from the master of his craft and find ways to protect our investments and keep our employees and our customers safe. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger and Brent Reston from Connect Security on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Krueger, and we are live with one final segment with Brent Reston, owner of Connect Security. We're talking all things security cameras and safety here in Southern Arizona. And before the break, Brent, we were talking about businesses and what businesses can do. But there are some difficulties in putting a myriad of cameras inside businesses such as mine. Think of restaurants, right? Where you could violate somebody's privacy very easily. I've got too many cameras over the bar. I might catch somebody dining with someone called not their wife. And you certainly can't put cameras in the restrooms. We had a fight or an alleged fight at the Maverick the other day. And someone, of course, was howling that we didn't have video. And I had to explain to them, like, sir, imagine if I did have video, like how much worse that would be. Like, what do businesses do to work on that balance between self-preservation, but also guest privacy?
No, it's a great balance. It's a great concern, and it's an important balance to strike, because you have to have your public, your high traffic areas covered, but you also have restrictions on what you can and can't cover based upon your business is obviously going to in and out of the bathrooms, things like that. You want to cover those public areas. Our guys at Connect Security are experts at this. Clint Washburn is outstanding in walking through and basically saying, okay, here's what your high risk areas are, kind of doing a risk analysis of the site and saying, here's where your high risk areas are. Here's where you can cover. Here's what you can't cover. Right. And here's what we need to, how we can do to mitigate those limitations that we have.
I remember in ye old days of cameras in the 90s and early 2000s, when I was a young duckling in the restaurant business, that one of the first training procedures we would have internally between the staff was, here's where the cameras don't cover. This is where you're going to go out by the dumpsters and sample the Mexican agriculture. And so, like, what do you do about that? Because you just can't have cameras be omniscient. Do you show your staff the results of the cameras so that they can see those dead areas? Or do you occult that so that they do think that this is sort of big brother omniscience, that they can see every facet of the business?
Boy, that's a great question and a long discussion to have. It's do you bring the staff in? The reality is that the cameras have gotten so much better, so we can just, you know, it used to be they have this one camera, it's facing one direction, it only gets this little area. Well, now we've got cameras that you can place flat on the wall, you can place in different areas, and they can have 360, they can have 180 kind of panoramic views. It's a lot easier to cover those dead spaces. And so it's really about designing how you want it to, how it's best for your business, and then making sure that the staff is probably going to know where it is, right? You know?
Of course, but it's certainly a big consideration about whether they know what that output is or not. And do you legally have to share that information from your cameras? Like, if a guest asks me, do I have to share that?
No.
If the police ask me, do I have to share that?
You can share it with the police, but it's not required that you share, hey, this is what I have cameras filming, this is the areas I have filming of. I mean, obviously, you're going to put the key areas where money's exchanged, things like that. You want to have full coverage on those areas.
But again, sometimes even the video is just not enough. Reforma was robbed at gunpoint a few years ago. My manager was literally pistol whipped and robbed at gunpoint. And this is River and Campbell again we're talking about, right? This isn't Grant and Alvernon or First and Fort Lowell. Like, this would be what we consider a nice area. And we had video footage of the grand majority of that incident. And yet the perpetrator, you know, years later, still not captured because of that. What else can we do besides or video on a business that's a little different than residential.
Absolutely. So one of the biggest things that we're seeing, in addition to video, right, cameras do help and they play a certain role in this, but access control and things like panic buttons under the counter or something like that, that we can immediately, when they know something's going wrong, that they can notify, that they can start the wheels in motion to get police out there, to get other people to respond. But also is the access control, is we have to be able to control and limit, when, even in public access areas, even with the general public, we have to be able to control and limit those, the access they have to our businesses and even within our businesses to certain areas, right? Back of house, things like that, is we got to make sure that we're doing everything we can to protect not only our employees, but also everyone around us, that we have to limit that access.
So what do you use for access control? Is this PIN numbers? Is this RFID tags? Is this a fingerprint or a laser scan of your eyeball? Like, what's the latest and greatest out there? What are we doing?
Right. It's all available. But some of the most important stuff is it, kind of the past, keypads are still available, still used in certain situations. RFID tags are much more common. And what's even becoming more common is your credentials on your cell phone, right? The cell phone is ubiquitous. It's on there right now. So I can enter and exit our offices with my cell phone, either activating it or just holding it up there, you know, or just having, stepping towards the door, is its credentials on the cell phone. So that's the most common right now.
No, it makes sense. Cell phones are becoming a key as well too for things such as vehicles.
Yep.
But it does drive me crazy when it's your only key, because you think about certain situations that maybe you don't want to lock your car. Say you're tailgating, right? And you're standing near your Tesla, you've got your cell phone in your pocket. You walk 10 feet away from the car and it self-locks. I didn't want to self-lock. I'm in the middle of barbecuing over here. I'm gearing up for the U of A New Mexico game at the end of the month, right? Having an adult beverage perhaps on the lawn, and I didn't want to lock everybody out. And so it does create some challenges that a traditional key doesn't as well.
It does, and the nice part is that we have much more control over that on the security system side than we do on the autos, right? So we can set parameters. We can set how and when it wants to be open, how far you are from the reader, things like that, to really control how it operates.
So Brett, where do our listeners learn more about Connect Security? You got to have a website, an Instagram page. Where do we get in touch with you guys to learn more?
Absolutely. Well, connectsecurity.com is our website. We're located on the east side. Our office is on the east side on 6751 East Camino Principal. And also our, bring this up, our phone number, 520-790-7302. It is, we are born and raised in Tucson. It's a 520, but it's also the 790, which means that we were old Tucson, been around here for a long time. That was the prefix that we all had. So
yeah, we're a 790 call-in number over here too at Bustos Media. So
absolutely.
OG, I like it.
So you know you were here prior to 1980 when we ran out of 790s. So
that's awesome. Well, certainly our listeners, go out there and take a look at connectsecurity.com. Do protect yourselves. We're going to be looking down the barrel of the next few years of having to have some self-responsibility. The government may not be out there to save us in some capacity. We're going to have to save ourselves and batten down the hatches a little bit as we process our way through both this homeless and fentanyl crisis that's affecting not just Tucson, of course, but a lot of the United States. It's certainly going to be a challenging next couple of years.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Brett, we appreciate you taking the time to join us today on Jump In Tucson. Love talking all things local Tucson, both the restaurant business, hospitality, local politics. It all sort of ties in together, which is one of the things that makes this show so great. And I appreciate our listeners taking the time to join us today. Again, tomorrow, we've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance talking all things cool venues to visit and check out in Tucson. Dr. Ed Ackerley is always bringing the heat from the University of Arizona. As you saw this weekend, they've named a new president as well too, Suresh Garimella. So we're looking forward to possibly getting some interviews with him here on this show in some capacity, as the university is such an important part of Southern Arizona over here. We're looking forward to the Wildcats coming back, mom and dad buying everything in town. Please do go visit all those local restaurants and bars. We're excited for that drip of customer rain to fall back in the long, hot summer deserts that we've had over these last few months. Looking forward to joining you guys next Wednesday on Jump In Tucson. Thanks again, Brett from Connect Security. Please look out for those guys, and it's been a pleasure spending this part of the morning with you. On 10:30 a.m., The Voice, your home for local news and talk.